question, Bill. Are you wanting anyone?
Like, I left my phone.
It's good for this job. Denise, it's really good for this job. Now everyone knows.
Right. Putting on health care to order for this February 23rd and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 1509. What do we have on this, Mr. Administrator?
Mr. Chair, Vice Chairs, and members of the committee, before you, Senate Bill 1509A, brought to you by the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. The measure removes exception to restrictions of idling of a commercial vehicle primary engine during loading or unloading. The measure authorizes a local government to adopt an ordinance restricting idling of a commercial vehicle primary engine on or adjacent to public or private K through 12 schools, specified child care facilities, hospitals, and residential care facilities. The measure passed out of the Senate unanimously, 27 votes, 3 excused.
My intention on this bill is to open a work session after we hear a little public testimony, move it, amend it on Monday, and move it to rules for further consideration. So that's where I'm expecting to go with it. Senator Dembro, you have honor.
Thank you very much, Chair Greenlee. Members of the committee, I'm very pleased to be bringing this bill to you, and particularly to the health care committee. And when you hear what this bill is about, I think you'll see why. This Senate Bill 1509 is a consensus bill that in its development involved the trucking industry, local government, and the environmental community. The provisions were first negotiated during the 2017 session as part of the omnibus diesel legislation that we did last year, Senate Bill 1008. But this piece didn't make it into the final legislation. You may remember that we did take a couple of pieces of that omnibus bill and put it into law. One having to do with retrofitting or replacing all of our school buses to get them clean as far as diesel goes, and then the other having to do with an inventory of off-road equipment. This was a piece that we probably could have put forward last year, did not, and I came to regret that decision, and I'll tell you why. Today, the statewide idling statute essentially restricts truck idling to no more than 5 minutes in a continuous 60-minute period, but it does contain a number of exceptions for certain circumstances, and the statute covers those exemptions. What this bill does is it limits those exemptions where the truck is near facilities with sensitive populations, such as schools, daycare facilities, hospitals, and residential care facilities. It allows local governments to pass ordinances to create idle-free zones, and they would post signs that clearly notify truck drivers that idling is prohibited in this area because of the sensitivity of the population. The bill does also include a provision that other states use, including California, that actually eliminates the idling restrictions in the case of new diesel trucks. Because as many of you may know from the debate last year, trucks that were built after 2007 are virtually particulate free. The challenge that we face is with the older trucks. And, you know, part of our goal is to try to find ways to move those older trucks into obsolescence and have them be either retrofitted or replaced by new trucks.
I understand that experience.
Yes. As we all do. We are seeing a lot of progress in the trucks that travel interstate. Just because of the turnover there, that industry is dominated by the newer trucks that are particulate free. But those that operate just within the state, around half of them are pre-2008 and half after. And those you know, a high proportion of those are those that do business within our neighborhoods near these facilities. And so, you know, hence the importance of this regulation. Now, you know, I want to stress that this bill is, you know, it certainly does not solve our diesel problem by any means. But it's another in a series of bills designed to protect Oregonians from the harmful health effects of older diesel engines. Passage and implementation of this bill will allow local governments to act immediately to protect the health of their most medically fragile residents. While this is another step in the right direction, however, our work is by no means done with the passage of this little bill. I know that there will be more legislation on this topic next session to address not only emissions from older diesel truck idling and operation, but also on the off-road diesel engine side. We'll have the results of the inventory that is currently being done, and we'll know how to proceed there. As you heard from Mr. Droppers, this bill passed out of committee unanimously and also off the Senate floor unanimously. And I just want to close with just some thoughts about why I'm bringing it forward to you this year. There are some people who would have preferred that this be held over for our future work on diesel. We have more work to do. Why take out this piece? And the reason for that is, you know, just I want to share with you one of the real motivations for including this idling provision in the first place in the bill last year was hearing from residents of a senior residence facility who were located near a place where there was a business where there was just a lot of truck idling, and these individuals were almost frantic in their desire to see that put to an end. And I was reminded of that, of them, back in October. I was just in an area, and there was a truck that was idling, and you know, idling is really crazy because it wastes fuel. It's not good for business. They should not be doing it, but they do it, and so it's a problem we need to get on top of. And anyway, just seeing that, it brought back to me the memory of that testimony from those senior residents, and I thought, you know, okay, we can wait a year, but the sooner that we can get these idle-free zones into effect, the more people will benefit from that. And so let's get this piece that we can all agree on, let's get it to move forward, and move it forward, and get some improvements in our neighborhoods. So I, of course, urge an aye vote, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions,
Senator? Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
You mentioned an amendment. Did you say you wanted to add an amendment and send this to
rules?
There
is an amendment proposed, and we'll consider it on Monday.
Oh, I see. Well, okay. Thank you. I just wondered if the originator of the bill had an opinion about that.
I have nothing to do with the amendment.
I see. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is the amendment posted on OLIS?
I don't think it is yet. That's why we'll hold it over till Monday.
Okay.
Representative Vile?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a matter of curiosity, Senator, for a truck, for an older truck that's been refitted with the post-2008, is there some way for a law enforcement officer to determine that if they pull up and a truck's idling in this zone?
Rip Vile, I don't believe that there is. If it's a if it's a newer truck, then they'll have a sticker on
right.
it. Well, this is an clean idle, right. certified clean idle. Unfortunately, I discovered that because now when I drive down the freeway, all I do is look for that sticker on the truck. And I narrowly avoid accidents. But for one that's been retrofitted, unless you really know the technology, you would not know. But you know, presumably the you know, the siting officer, either law enforcement or a parking official or whoever is doing it, would give the citation, and the individual would be able to say, no, wait a minute, this is retrofitted.
Thank you. Okay, will you call the panel of witnesses, please? Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Thank you all.
We have Dana Jarvis, Dan Eisenbus, and Angela Crowley-Koch.
I'll ask you all to say what you need to say, but not a word more.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Angela Crowley-Koch, Legislative Director of Oregon Environmental Council. Since 2011, when the Oregon Legislature passed HB 2081 to regulate idling, no conclusive evidence has been found to indicate that the law has been effective. There have been no citations issued. And because idling poses serious health risks, we need to improve upon that legislation to ensure that fewer heavy vehicles are idling. So I have a list of improvements in my written testimony. I won't go over all of them for the sake of time. But unfortunately, none of these are addressed by the current bill, Senate Bill 1509. We're concerned also that this bill would allow model year 2008 or newer engines to idle. While that does cleaner diesel does reduce air toxics, it's still producing greenhouse gas emissions, that transportation sector is our largest source of greenhouse gas emissions. So this is actually moving us in the wrong direction on that point. So very quickly, there are a number of improvements. My testimony has 12 improvements that could be made to the idling law, which we feel would be a better step forward rather than this voluntary measure proposed by this bill. One of them, the first one, is to expand the kind of vehicles that would be subject to idling restrictions. You can also reduce the idling time. Right now, our state law is 5 minutes of idling. Many other states have 3 or 2 minutes of idling restrictions. We can tighten the temperature ban. We can phase out a rest period exemption, tighten the 30-minute loading and unloading exception. There's a lot of different things we can do to idling. And so Senate Bill 1509, because it is voluntary, for us does not go far enough. So we encourage the committee to take a look at these other improvements that we can make to idling as the next step forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Greenlich, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate Bill 1509. For the record, I'm Dan Eisenbeis with the City of Portland. We agree that this bill before you is a very small step in addressing diesel emissions from idling, but we think it is a step in the right direction. For the City of Portland, we would certainly favor a full repeal of the preemption on local idling regulations and would very much be interested in a conversation about how to strengthen the statewide idling policy. But this does provide an additional tool to local communities that are concerned about diesel emissions in their communities. And for the City of Portland, air quality is very much a priority. North Portland has the highest level of diesel emissions in the state, about 20 times the health standard, and most parts of Portland exceed the health standard. As you have heard in your work this session, diesel emissions cause a range of very serious health effects. And I do want to take a moment to both acknowledge and thank this committee for its work to move House Bill 4003 forward earlier this session. I agree with the testimony that you just heard from Angela in that there are other types of facilities where that could benefit from stronger idling policies. In the City of Portland, our recent comprehensive plan focuses most of the residential growth that Portland will be experiencing along commercial and mixed-use corridors with the development of additional multifamily buildings. We would greatly prefer to have the authority to restrict idling near residential development and multifamily development as well, but we believe that this is a good start and would urge your support for Senate Bill 1509. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Jana Jarvis, president of the Oregon Trucking Association. I'm here today to speak in favor of Senate Bill 1509A and remind the committee that this has been a consensus bill that's involved the trucking industry, local governments, and the environmental community in the interim. So it's an interesting panel for me to be sitting up here with this morning, different testimony to that effect. But I do want to remind the committee that the most important thing I can leave you with today is that trucking companies don't want their trucks to idle. Idling burns fuel. Fuel's one of the major costs borne by a trucking company. And so from the point of view from trucking companies, it's dollars that are going out of the exhaust stacks. And most of my members have programs in place to discourage and to encourage drivers to shut off their engines and limit idling. And these programs range from cash bonuses to punitive measures. The current idling statute, ORS 825-605, as Senator Dembro mentioned, restricts idling to 5 minutes in a 60-minute period. However, there are times when a truck needs to idle, and those situations are covered under ORS 825-610. This bill allows local governments to further restrict truck idling at facilities with sensitive populations, as you've heard, schools, daycare, hospitals, residential care facilities, when signs are posted that clearly notify the truck driver that idling is prohibited. And it also adopts the provision, as has California, that limits the idling restrictions for trucks that have the clean idle sticker. So for that reason, I would ask for your support today on Senate Bill 1509A as it stands, and remind the committee that our support for this bill is dependent on the language remaining consistent in this particular provision. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions in the panel? Yes, Representative Buehler.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Greenlick. Dan, can you tell me how many diesel engines the city of Portland owns that's pre-2008?
Chair Greenlick, Representative Buehler, thank you for the question. Off the top of my head, I cannot tell you, but what I can tell you is that the city of Portland has retrofitted or replaced nearly all of the older diesel engines in its fleet. That's been an effort that's been undertaken since 2006. I'm happy to look into precise numbers and follow up with you.
That'd be great.
Representative Salinas.
Thank you, Chair. So I serve on the Ag and Natural Resources Committee, and some things that have come up here as well as there is fires and carbon monoxide, and obviously we're looking at a clean energy jobs bill right now. So CO2, diesel particulate matter, point source pollution are all things that we've been looking at this year. How would this bill relate to the clean energy jobs bill? So if we don't, because I was instrumental in helping work on the 2011 bill, if there isn't really discernible change from that point, how are we going to capture that in one of these other pieces? So my mantra has been, it's and. We can't ignore any one piece of these pollutants. So can any of you answer that?
Chair Greenlick, Representative Salinas, I can try. So the Clean Energy Jobs Bill would have proceeds that could be used to upgrade diesel engines to cleaner diesel or to different types of engines that wouldn't use diesel at all. So that's one overlap. But idling is tricky, and so that's why we're encouraging stronger, we agree with the city of Portland, we like to see the preemption lifted, but barring that, there are so many other things we can do to improve our idling regulations more than this voluntary step.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative Salinas, I'd like to add, I think in my testimony I mentioned to you, obviously, that companies are not wanting trucks to idle per se, but I think you all need to understand that there are some rational reasons for that, such as power lift gates. If you're delivering and you need to run your power lift gate, if you have a refrigerated unit to maintain temperature, I mean, there are some legitimate business reasons. Some of those, some newer vehicles have auxiliary power units that, so they don't, the truck doesn't need to idle. But there are some reasons for idling that relate to business purposes in the delivery. The Clean Energy Jobs Act was based on a lot of work over the last several months, but not a lot of discussion from the transportation sector. And so I think there are a number of issues outside of this particular idling discussion that remain to be resolved in that before we can have a really comprehensive look at the impact of transportation on those environmental circumstances.
Kenny Garner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you tell me how much an auxiliary power unit costs?
Chair Greenlick, Representative Kenny Geyer, I apologize, I cannot.
Okay, if you could follow up with me, that'd be
certainly.
Thank you.
I'm going to close public hearing on House Bill 1509 and carry the bill over to Monday. I'm going to open a public hearing on what's the bill we got? 1549. Will you tell us about the bill, please?
Mr. Chair, Vice Chairs, and members of the committee, before you, Senate Bill 1549 brought to you by the Senate Committee on Healthcare. You may recall the bill received an informational hearing on Wednesday. The bill does three things. It allows OHA or DHS to continue Medicaid coverage for a person admitted to the Oregon State Hospital. Second, it grants DCBS authority to approve filings for health benefit plan policies qualifying for health savings account distribution. And third, it requires health insurers to reimburse out-of-network providers for covered services provided in an in-network healthcare facility in amount to be established in rule by DCBS. There is a dash A8, it's on OLIS, and it removes the requirement that DCBS consult with health professional licensing boards on consumer complaints related to a report that they have to give back to the legislature. There's no revenue impact, and it's indeterminate fiscal.
Before we call the first panel, there was a proposed amendment to deal with a conflict that's going on between the nursing board, the nurses, and the radiation. What's the board called now?
Nurse anesthetist.
Excuse me?
The medical imaging board.
Yeah, the imaging board. We decided not to take this up because this bill is important in its own right, and that adds a controversial piece to it. But both Senator Montes Anderson and I would really like to send a strong message, and we're going to send a joint letter to all the parties to get together between now and the 2019 session and settle this issue. There isn't any reason why this should need legislation, or if it should need legislation, it ought to be legislation everybody agrees to. So we are formally at this point going to ask those boards and the union and the other organizations that represent some of the nurses involved in this to please settle this thing before 2019 so we don't need to deal with it then. Would you call the first panel, please?
Chair, we have Director Patrick Allen and Eric Price.
Had an informational meeting on an informational hearing, so we didn't have to have replicated testimony, but tell us what you need to tell us. And we're always glad to see you.
Thank you, Chair Greenlick, members of the committee. Patrick Allen, Director of the Oregon Health Authority. Here just very briefly to talk about what was originally the base piece of the bill that we think is fairly simple and straightforward. I'm joined by Eric Price, who's the acting CFO at the State Hospital. In case you want to get into detailed questions about the underlying financial mechanisms. Basically, it's this. Federal law prohibits us from submitting Medicaid claims to the federal government for anyone in a large mental institution, which the state hospital, of course, qualifies as. We have a corresponding state law that requires us, when someone enters the state hospital, to disenroll them from the Oregon Health Plan. I think largely that's a mechanism to prevent us from inappropriately submitting bills and dealing with those kinds of issues. However, that results in some negative consequences that this bill tries to enable us to work on trying to fix. There are largely two things. One, once we've disenrolled someone from the Oregon Health Plan, now that we really are doing a much better job of getting people at the hospital ready to be able to be discharged back to the community or to community-level treatment much more quickly, it really presents a barrier to continuity of care. We've got to get them re-enrolled in the Oregon Health Plan, get them reset up with a coordinated care organization, all those things. And so by not disenrolling them, we're able to avoid those circumstances. Secondly, there are financial benefits to the hospital, chief among them, if someone is dual eligible for both the health plan and for Medicaid, if we maintain their enrollment in the Oregon Health Plan while not still pursuing benefits but have claims appropriately denied, we can submit those to CMS for indigent care reimbursement under Medicaid, and that can have a significant positive financial impact for the hospital. The language in the bill is permissive, and so all we're doing is basically knocking down the statutory barrier. To actually implement this, there's a significant amount of work that we'll need to do with CCOs, potentially some systems work, and other things to make sure that we do this in a way that we all understand what does it mean to be enrolled but not getting benefits. Are there coordination of care work that's being done? All those kinds of things. This just allows us to be able to go down that path because it takes the statutory prohibition away. We'll have a lot of work to do, and we'll come back and report on how that's going over time. Be happy to answer questions you might have.
Are there any questions? Aren't there some units of the hospital that might qualify for the 16-bed? Or is this anybody under the state hospital list?
I don't believe we have anyone, any individual units of the hospital that qualify that way. Eric, is that accurate?
Representative Greenlick, the answer to that question is the facility as a whole, if it has more than 16 beds, hits that trigger.
I want you to identify yourself.
Oh, for the record, my name is Eric Price, interim CFO of the state hospital. And to answer that question, the facility as a whole is considered, it's not individual units. So even if a unit has 15 beds, it still triggers the IMD.
Thank you, Chair Greenlake. Is this equal across all populations in the state hospital? We have kind of different categories. Is it for everybody?
That'd be correct.
So 370 population isn't treated differently than...
Correct.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Did you call? Do you have a couple more witnesses?
We have four more.
Four more.
We have Sabrina Riggs and Kathy Kane. Looks like we've got Courtney and Jessica.
Where are you guys coming from?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Katie King, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon chapter of the American College of Emergency Physicians. And they support the provisions in this bill that to implement a minimum reimbursement standard for unexpected out-of-network emergency care in advance of the ban on balance billing, which goes into effect next week. The chapter has been an active participant in the work group discussions organized by DCBS on this issue, starting in 2016, and they supported House Bill 2339, which took patients out of the middle from unexpected bills and created an interim work group to develop recommendations in time for this session. While a consensus was not reached, we appreciate the efforts of DCBS to facilitate an agreement and the leadership of legislators to make sure that something was put in place in advance of the ban on balance billing, which goes into effect March 1st. This bill will also ensure that patients will not be financially penalized for receiving out-of-network emergency care by limiting their financial exposure to in-network rates for copays and deductibles. And the compromise solution, and it's complicated, is, among other things, benchmarked to the all-payers, all-claims 2006-15 data and adjusted for inflation. It's transparent and designed so that no one side has undue leverage at the contracting table while we work out a longer-term solution in advance of the when the bill sunsets in 2022. While the rules don't go into effect until 2019, DCBS did put on the record already that their expectation is that providers are paid according to our negotiated agreement, while the remaining issues around out-of-network reimbursement are worked out through the administrative rules process. And we urge the bill to urge the committee to pass the bill with the DCBS amendments and have that done in advance of the implementation date of March 1st. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sabrina Riggs. I'm representing the Oregon Society of Anesthesiologists as well as the Oregon Association of Orthopedic Surgeons. Katie covered most of the points, I think, so I'll be pretty brief. Both of these associations are supportive of 1549 as well as the Dash A8 amendments. As you're likely aware, both of these clients did participate in the work group through the interim. We met five or six times and had several hours of subsequent negotiations following that. It was definitely a difficult task, but you know, the physicians and the insurers were able to reach an agreement, and that is housed within sections 4 through 8 of the bill. It's not quite ideal. It wasn't, you know, exactly what everyone was hoping for, I think, but we did reach an agreement, and I think most importantly, it's going to protect physicians, networks, and most importantly, patients. Respectfully, we ask that you do adopt the Dash A8 amendments and pass the bill to the floor.
Thank you.
Courtney Dresser with the Oregon Medical Association. I don't know why I came up. They did a great job. Just want to thank. I do want to thank, on the record, thank Senator Lori Montes Anderson and Senator Elizabeth Steiner Hayward. When we did approach them and share some concerns with not having something in statute or rate in statute, they did bring us all back together and put us to a table, and we do appreciate that. So thank you to those two senators, and thank you, and we appreciate you moving this bill forward.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jessica Adamson, excuse me, with Providence Health and Services. I'm emotional about this bill. You know, it's real exciting when you talk about network rates. We are supportive of Senate Bill 1549 and the Dash A8 amendments that help preserve the agreement that was reached between providers and carriers on the Senate side in this bill. This bill has been a journey and contains many important components. We want to thank DCBS, the providers, as well as senators for helping to make sure that this agreement is viable and workable. We still have a road ahead of us to implement the provisions that are included in sections 4 through 8. For example, today, if one of these claims comes through our system, we would not be able to distinguish it between any other out-of-network claim. So it's going to take some time for us to be able to identify claims that would be balance billing claims from other out-of-network claims. It's going to take some time for us to have the rates from the APAC data, but we are committed to coming to the table, continuing to work through the interim and get to a solution in the rule process as quickly as possible. And we really appreciate the collaborative nature of this process to get us there. Encourage quick passage of this bill with the A8 amendment. Thank you.
I'm going to say something about this bill. This has been a long and arduous journey to get here. But the thing that stimulated us in the beginning was everybody's concern that patients shouldn't get screwed.
That's right.
I think that was an important motivation.
Is that a medical term?
That's a term of art. Thank you. Are there any questions to the panel? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1549A and open a work session on Senate Bill 1549A. Representative Hayden.
Chair Greenlink, I move to adopt the Dash A8 amendments dated February
20, 2018. Representative Hayden moves to adopt the Dash A8 amendments dated 2/20 to Senate Bill 1549A. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Is there any objection to the amendment? So moved. Representative Hayden?
Chair Greenlich, I move Senate Bill 1549A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Hayden moves Senate Bill 1549A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Would you call the roll, please?
Yes.
Representative
Viles? Aye.
Representative Malmstrom?
Aye.
Representative Kinnemer?
Aye.
Representative Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Bueller?
Yes.
Representative Alonzo Leon?
Yes.
Representative Bowles?
Yes.
Vice Chair Nose?
Yes.
Vice Chair Hayden?
Yes.
Chair Greenland?
Aye. Motion carries. Representative Nose will carry the bill on the floor. Yeah. And we will close the work session on House Bill 1549A. And open a work session on House Bill 1547A. Mr. Minister, what have you got?
Mr. Chair, Vice Chairs, members of the committee, before you is House Bill 1547A, brought to you by the Senate Committee on Health Care. The bill received a public hearing on Wednesday. The measure expands a list of qualified health professionals who can provide a medical release of a student athlete suspected of having a concussion to include the following: chiropractic physicians, naturopathic physicians, psychologists, physical therapists, occupational therapists, physician assistants, nurse practitioners, and athletic trainers. The bill specifies requirements for qualified health professionals, which I just listed, to obtain a certificate after completion of an online program to be developed and offered by OHSU. There is a dash A4 amendment on OLIS, which removes athletic trainers from the list of qualified health professionals who can provide a medical release. There's a no revenue impact and indeterminate fiscal. Committee has the paperwork both for the 1547A as well as for the dash A4.
To introduce the discussion, I will point out that the Senator Monson has asked strongly that this bill go be passed cleanly. The work group on this has been going on, it seems to me, forever. It would be my hope we can do that as well, but we have an amendment before, so somebody want to enter that amendment.
May I request a short recess for
sure? Absolutely, let's stand. I'll call the committee back to order. Can we put the motion to pass the bill on the floor first, or go right with it?
Well, he can move his amendment.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Call the committee back to order.
Chair, I move that we adopt the A4 amendment to House Bill 1547A.
A4.
Representative Hayden.
A4.
What was the A4 amendments to Senate Bill 1547A? Is there a discussion on the motion?
Yeah, Chair Greenlich, I just
Representative
like.
Representative
Yeah, my concern with this is the twofold is athletic trainers don't have the separation that many of the other providers on that list from undue conflict of interest. And I think many times athletic trainers under significant pressure to get kids back into games, and it puts them in an awkward position. And I think also compared to all the other providers that we are expanding this ability to, athletic trainers clearly don't have the same level of training. They don't have graduate degrees, and I think it's not appropriate.
Any other discussion on the motion? Representative Vile?
Frightens me to death to disagree with Dr. Bueller, especially given my recent appointment to this committee, but I have become convinced in the last couple of days that the trainer being closest to the situation of anybody, and with our increasing consciousness about the very profound effects of these brain injuries, I'm inclined to support having the trainers both get the certification and continue to be in a position to help us. So I'll be voting against the amendment.
I can assure you that if you need surgery from Dr. Bueller, he won't hold that
I'm hoping that's the case.
But if he needs a return to play, he can go see his athletic
trainer. Well, fair enough.
You know what? If you're going to do that, at least the athletic trainer will have had the training, right? We're requiring the athletic trainer to get the training.
Representative Kenny Guy.
Well, do you want to go?
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And Hayden.
So I'm also going to be in opposition to the amendment. I did think a lot about the conflict of interest. I do take that point very seriously. But I think it's also, in addition to the fact that they are actually trained, and this is the area of healthcare and practice that they focus on, there's also what was compelling to me, the fact that they know these players before the incident happens. And so I think there's pros and cons to the fact that they are so close to the player. I do want to say for the and I would say that conflict of interest is a human nature phenomenon, and I do think the stories of doctor shopping is of concern. And so I do want to say for the record that were I to support any amendment, it might have been around athletic trainers, that they have to have a master's degree. 70% of them do currently, and they 100% will have to within a couple of years, I think. If we had entertained any amendments, I might have tried to strengthen it that way, but I am comfortable because of the additional training. But I do want to say for the record that the piece that I'm least comfortable with, and again, if we were to do an amendment, the one that I think would have been more important is that the physicians also get the specific training. Because I think that physicians that may have gotten a medical degree in the 70s, there is so much emerging research. And you've got a whole wide range of physicians, from family practitioners that may see a fair amount of this to people that focus on diabetes or surgery or some other things that may not be as relevant to this. And human nature, given what it is, if you've got friends or family members who are on that team and you want to see them back, there's every concern I have in the world that it could also be abused in that way. So I would hope two things that I want on the record. I would hope that the training would talk about conflict of interest and make sure that you deal with the human nature side of things, not just the physiological and scientific side. And secondly, I would hope that we track what happens with return to play by physicians to see whether, in fact, in the future, we should tighten it up and ensure that they also have this kind of training.
Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Chair Greenlake. On a little bit lighter note, I have spent my life with four dentists in my family, one physician, one dental hygienist for my siblings. And we used to hire my older brother, who's an emergency room physician and electrical engineer, to come out and give us medical trainings. And I recall at the end of every training session that he would have for our clinics, he would say, if you get in a real problem, call a real doctor. And so as I look at this bill and notice that dentists are not included in here, I'm just thankful that I don't have a brother that's an athletic trainer.
Representative Kinnaman.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't support the amendment. I guess I would say to the representative from Mount Tabor that licensed professionals have an absolute obligation to have expertise in anything that they do. And so they should eliminate themselves if they do not have appropriate upgraded training to make such judgments.
I would hope that
would be
the case.
And I think there is a safeguard there. Yeah, and I would hope that they would honor that.
If I could just respond, I would hope that's the case. I would hope that's the case of medical trainers too. But okay. Human nature, what it is, when you're pulled, either because you're the athletic trainer for a team or because you're a physician that has a close tie to a family that wants their kid back on the field. That's the kind of thing I think the training it's really important for it to emphasize. And so for that reason, in addition to the physiological updated research reasons, I regret that physicians are not included in the certification. But
Mr. Chair, just one more comment.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I guess this committee has had some discussions about requiring various and specific continuing ed requirements for various professionals and especially physicians. And, you know, I think for the most part we've taken the position that they can be trained by their, they have responsibility and should be trained by their people. And if they want extra expertise, then they should pursue that. I've said more than I meant to. I'm ready. Can I call?
Another reason to vote against the bill.
Thank you. No. Would you call the roll, please? This is on the amendment.
Representative Cameron?
No.
Representative Malmstrom?
No.
Representative Bowles?
No.
Representative Alonso Leon?
No.
Representative Nile?
No.
Representative Salinas?
No.
Representative Bueller?
Yes.
Representative Kenny Geyer?
No.
Vice Chair Hayden?
Yes.
Vice Chair Nose?
No.
Chair Greenleaf?
No. Motion fails. We have a motion on the main bill, please.
Chair Greenleaf, I would move Senate Bill 1547A to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Representative Nose moves Senate Bill 1547A to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Could you call the roll, please?
Representative Bowles.
I'm sorry, Representative Bowles.
Thank you, Chair.
You're way down there.
I know, I should. I just wanted to make a couple comments. I've enjoyed this conversation and I appreciate the work that's been done on this bill over the last couple years. I will be supporting this today, but I wanted to make kind of three notations. I still have some concerns about liability issues with our school districts. I wish that more school districts had impact assessments for their student athletes. I think that's a absolutely awesome tool. And I'm also voting for this with the assumption that the online concussion program that's being developed will be robust and strong and will give the practitioners the tools that they need to really address the concussion situations that are occurring in our schools. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Could you call the roll, please?
Representative Kenner?
Aye.
Representative Malmstrom?
Aye.
Representative Bowles?
Aye.
Representative Alonso Leon?
Yes.
Representative Vile?
Aye.
Representative Salinas?
Aye.
Representative Bueller?
No.
Representative Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hayden?
No.
Vice Chair Nose?
Yes.
Chair Greenleaf?
Yes, motion carries. Representative Kenneman will carry the bill on the floor. The close the work session on Senate Bill 1547. See you all Monday for the last piece of work we have.
Do you want to remind me that there's a joint committee on Wednesday?
Oh, I forgot about that. Will you tell us about that?
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, members of the committee, on Wednesday, the 28th, we're going to have a joint committee with Senate Health to hear about the PEB OEB merger, and that will be in hearing room F from 3 to 4.
Oh. 3 to 4 on Wednesday?
Say that again.
On Wednesday?
3 to 4 Wednesday. That assumes we're not on 3 to 4 at that time.
Wednesday.
Does that mean we have a. So that's our regular time? 3 to 4?
Pardon me? It is. Yeah, we'll just be in hearing room F instead of E on Wednesday.
Yeah, there was interest in finding out where. PEB and OEB merger discussions are going. We've asked the executive committee that's managing the process to join with us, and we thought it would be useful to have them brief both committees at the same time. So unless we're on the floor at 3 o'clock, we will have that meeting, and we will just Monday at our regular time, 3 o'clock.
And we have until 4:45 anyway, so if we're laid off the floor, we should still reserve the time until 4:45.
Okay. In March 2nd, we're for sure not meeting?
Pardon me?
March 2nd, we're for sure not meeting or still?
We were talking about having having two informational on one day. What day is that?
Well, the one informational, the joint committee, that's Wednesday, we haven't confirmed any additional.
There are two other requests for information. We'll see. You need some surety on not scheduling any.
Early in the week would be fine.
All right. We'll see how.
And I would put in a plug for Tuesday or Thursdays.
We don't need
information.
Well, we don't need
Tuesday.
Tuesday. So we can use our
Monday.
Regular.
Monday the 5th.
Okay.
Or Wednesday the 7th.
I'll work with the chair to see if we can.
All right. We'll figure it out.
Well, all right.
Thank you all. We're adjourned.
Not that I don't mind.